about sunrise? What about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing fields? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the blood we shed before? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth, this weeping shore? What we've done. What about all the peace that you pledged your only son? What about flowering fields? Is there a time? What about all the dreams that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the children dead from war? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth, this weeping shore?
Okay, everybody, welcome back. This is James Martinez with another edition of Cash Flow here. I got a very special guest that was actually referred to me by a person that I met online through other contacts that I've had regarding my interest in free energy, interest in changing the world, and making scientists such as John Hutchison, my guest coming up, a little bit more supported by the public. For those of you that are new to this and are looking in different areas and researching and seeing why in the world guys like this are not getting more financial help from all over the world, we're going to learn a little bit about that. For those of you that are new to this, I want you to go ahead and, if you'd like to, go to hutchinsoneffect.ca, and you're going to hear and read about my guest coming on here in just a moment here, Hutchison Effect. That's Hutchisone Effect.ca. Again, it's Hutchisoneffect.ca. John Hutchison is well known all over the world and has been interviewed on countless radio stations, appeared all over television, all over the world for his experiments in physics, as well as doing a vast array of unusual effects, which include and are not limited to levitation of heavy objects, gelification of metals, fusion of dissimilar materials such as metal and wood, anomalous heating of metals without burning adjacent material, spontaneous fracturing of metals, both temporary and permanent changes in crystalline structure and physical properties of metals, other effects resulting from what is believed to be a very complex scalar wave interaction between electromagnetic fields and matter. Currently, for those of you that have been doing research and know about this particular gentleman, he is, as we speak, helping out with the BP oil spill, which is where I really wanted to include his commentary on what's going on there, as well as a little bit about what he's doing with his life right now in terms of all his research and what he's done. On the line today, we both have John Hutchison and his partner Nancy is going to be joining us today. Just a quick announcement before we bring those guys on. Tomorrow, as scheduled, will be Bob Neverett, Dr. Carolyn Dean, and Ion will there be appearing. And then on Thursday, I'm happy to announce that we're going to be having our first endorsed student in high school, actually, that was referred to me by Dr. Edmund Storm, talking about cold fusion. This is a high school student now that is stepping up to the plate and going public about his interest in cold fusion and getting on board there. But without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on John and Nancy. Thank you very much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Nancy is, thank you for having me on your radio show. Nancy's in the other room. I just wanted to make a correction for your audience that www.hutchisoneffect.ca is a pirate website.
Ah, thank you for letting me know that.
Yeah, my website is MySpace John K Hutchison.
Okay, one more time.
Website. Yeah.
Give it to us one more time, would you?
It's, okay, my website is myspace.com, John K. Hutchison.
Great, great. Thank you so much for that, everybody. Please go to that one to find out further information about John Hutchison. Now, John, I've got to tell you, I want to thank you for taking the time out today. I know you've been interviewed all over the world. You've been featured in tons of film footage and whatnot with all your experiments and so forth. I mean, the apparent thing at hand at this point is, what are you doing down in as far as cleaning up the BP oil spill? Because I think that's an incredible, valiant effort, and the use of your time down there should be supported by everybody. How's that going for you, and how did that even start? Where did that come from? Were you asked to do it, or did you volunteer to go down there?
Oh, no. Actually, I've known Nancy for a year prior to that, and she came up to Vancouver, Canada, and we talked about all this. And I decided for a whole new change and everything, and I sold, like, I have duplicates of the anti-gravity lab, like twos and threes of everything, and I sold half of that to a German research team for their experimentation, and then the rest of it, we then decided to go to the Gulf of Mexico and apply the Hutchison effect to the seas down here. And I thought, well, this would be great because I love America, and I thought it would help out.
Well, so this was of your own free will you decided to do this?
Beg your pardon?
This is from your own free will. You just decided to take your equipment and whatnot and go down there and see what results you would have. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those people that don't know, could you explain what the Hutchison effect is?
It was an accidental discovery I made in 1979 when I replicated Nikola Tesla's laboratory to the 18th century standards and noticed strange movements happening within the lab, movement of objects, metal turning funny, and that kind of thing. And I didn't think much of it, really. I didn't care about it that much. But then the information leaked out to a group of scientists in Canada and the United States, and then they started to promote it, bringing in groups from different areas like Washington State University, SAIC, down in San Diego, and then eventually to the U.S. Pentagon, where it was funded and presented to the Star Wars program in 1983. Then onward and upward, so to speak, I guess, to different aerospace firms and the Canadian government, German government, Japan government, and so on and so forth. Then I decided to opt out of some contracts and go public with it with mainstream media, as well as other media sources, Discovery Channel, Fox, CNN, and that, because it paid well and I had fun and freedom, whereas if I was to sign the contracts, I would have no freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be tied up in these contracts, which I couldn't tell anybody about what I was doing.
Right.
It'd be a boring nine to five job. So with the Discovery Channel people or Fox or whoever and whatever, it paid extremely well for one day. And plus the shows were very intriguing for a lot of young folks out there in around the world. They like the shows. I get a lot of positive comments coming back. And eventually it sort of grew from there, and a lot of people asked me how to build certain.
You have a huge following of people. I mean, I've looked and known about you for a long time, and I've looked on that line, and I've talked to other people privately and other scientists about you. And I've got to say, you are a pioneer in so much so that when you just said that if you signed contracts, you would have had, you know, had to be compartmentalized. You would have it would have lacked the freedom to do what you wanted to do. When I'm interviewing scientists, and I've interviewed a lot of top scientists in cold fusion, I always hear these stories about funding. Okay, we're going to give you the money, but you're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to talk to this person. We're going to own you, and you're going to do what we say. Has this been a problem for you for a long time? Because when I looked at an interview with you, I was really pleased to see that you're your own free agent, so to speak, and you don't think like or conduct yourself as a normal scientist at all, which I think is great. Has money always been an issue in terms of people saying, "Oh, we're going to support you, but you're going to do what we say"? Has that always been an issue for you?
Oh, many people I turned away for major funding, and yet I found a few funders that were very spiritual and open-minded who funded me for $150,000 and said, "Here, do whatever you want with it, basically, and let's see what we can accomplish with that." So I had that happen from Japan as well as Germany. And they were really cool people. The German team simply wanted to have nothing to tie them down to their travels and adventures, so we decided to not go any further with the funding, and we remain best of friends. The Japanese folks are like, "Oh, here's funding, let's see what happens," basically the same kind of thing. And my funder from Japan was very excited about when I built the Ark of the Covenant, could I return to Japan and show them all this stuff, but he never came back, so I don't know if he's in ill health or he's okay or what, but no, as I said, I turned down even from Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein, one of my fans. I turned down his offers because his offers are really cool offers, but I would have to work in a controlled situation in Toronto, Canada, so I declined on that. I thought because, heck, you know, Discovery Channel and my producer there, they will sell at $75 per second footage of the experiments, and within a day I can have like $10,000 from Japan, or what other group buys the footage? CNN, Fox, or whoever. But all that sort of ended when the bailout happened, and so I'm kind of, because money's not that free, so that's when I sold the half of the lab to the German research team.
Now, I have seen, and a lot of other people have seen, the things, the experiments you've conducted, and they're all over YouTube, and you truly are a pioneer. Is there stuff that you have achieved that you didn't even know was going to happen, that you did not be able to catch on film, that you can talk about?
Oh, on film? Yeah, we had a lot of stuff that... but never made it on film. In the early days of Super 8 millimeter film and old early video stuff, McDonnell Douglas has 6 hours of tapes, which I have. I mean, I got several crates of thousands of hours of videos, but there's a lot of things that should have been on video. A lot of videos. The U.S. government never returned the videos they took, as well as the Canadian Department of Defense took a lot of video footage with about six different cameras, but they never returned any of that footage and said, "Well, it's a matter of national security," to my member of parliament, Chuck Cook. Now, I also bugged Colonel Alexander for footage from the 1983 experiments, but he can't seem to find it. But I got a bunch of slides anyway from Los Alamos that show some of the weird experiments I do, and I just uploaded those to my MySpace profile, the slides, and my attempts at trying to capture what was on the slides. I just found them digging through some stuff the other day. So, I had an offer in 2006 to work yet again for the U.S. Pentagon Group, Air Force Division, but I respectfully declined. And then NASA wanted to work with me, with Kennedy Space Center people, but their director and friends had a meeting on all that a couple of years ago as well, and the director just basically said, "No, let's stay on target with our funding and our companies that supply us all the materials." So, you know, there's close encounters like that. So, as I said, I like my freedom and be able to.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah. Now, I when the whole world watched the oil spill, where were you located when that was happening? Were you where you are now, or were you in Canada? And as you were watching it on television, did you see, okay, I'd like to go down and see if my experiments could help with cleanup? Or was this something – how did this arrive from you? Where did you get this idea to do this? And how is it working? I'm dying to hear about how this is working.
Well, I started following the oil spill on CNN because I thought, well, it's an oil spill, so, you know, they'll probably take care of it. And then as time progressed, I was in Canada, by the way, watching CNN late at night and Anderson Cooper going on about this, and it looked like this is becoming more and more of a disaster. Then I was in contact with Nancy, who felt this is highly going to be one heck of a disaster. Like, she's a visionary, and we talked on the phone, and eventually she came up to Canada, was denied access by the funny border people, but eventually got through, because I got denied access when I went to the United States, but eventually got through. I don't know what's going on with Homeland Security, but anyhow, they came up, Nancy came up with a trailer and a truck, and eventually that's when she helped me to sell off the anti-gravity lab. The German people came over, inspected everything, and we worked together. We worked together on experiments with oil in the laboratory, before and after tests done with motor oil, because they couldn't find any of the crude oil. Mm-hmm. And she put out a request for samples from down in the Gulf, which eventually did come up to Canada. We worked together. Time for me to change my lifestyle anyway. Plus, she's a beautiful lady, and what the heck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I decided to forever leave New Westminster, British Columbia, and the mayor, and all of that stuff going on there, because I was getting too well known doing these experiments, and it caused disruption in other people's apartment buildings. And the mayor was on my case, and although we're still friends, and I decided to, oh well, time to go. So,
Right.
Nancy got a broker, stock or customs broker, who took care of all the legalities of everything, and then she took off, and then later on I was going to go, but Homeland Security, simply because I trespassed in their mind, I trespassed on the Cherry Point refinery of British Petroleum, which is not the case. It's an open road leading right into the gates, and we were going to turn around, but a security guard nabbed us and said, well, you know, what are you doing here, kind of thing, and then he wrote up a report, going to contact Homeland Security. Which he did do, and then the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, came and visited me in Canada and also talked to Nancy. And then when she went to the United States, the FBI interrogated her all over this Cherry Point refinery, British Petroleum stuff. And so I had to prepare my paperwork for Homeland Security, because I didn't was interrogated, fingerprinted, mugshot for 3 or 4 hours. I reapproached him with a smile and showed him my documentation. You know, I'm not, no criminal records, nothing like that, blah, blah, blah. And eventually he let me through, off to the races kind of thing. At first, because I've been across that border so many times for decades, I never had a problem. I even got to know some of the customs agents, but this one time, simply because of British Petroleum. So anyhow, I joined up with Nancy in Portland, and we had an epic journey down to the Gulf, eventually arriving as a guest at Perdido Bay, where we set up the first experiments. And I believe before and after samples was they were tested at 7% contamination, 7 parts per million, down to just under 1%. That was number one test. I was rather skeptical about all this. I thought, well, you know, nothing's going to really happen. I mean, come on, you know. But it didn't happen. And then there was other tests that were done. And we have some more tests coming in today, I believe, on before and after experiments with this machinery in a 22-foot-long trailer operating, sending out all these radio waves and audio. Nancy is actually the composer of the audio signals.
I've heard the audio signals. I've heard them on your YouTube channel, and I thought, is this a soundtrack or is this their actual real sound? I wasn't sure when I was listening to it. I'm like, wow, what is that going on in the background there? So what's happened? What's happened as far as cleaning up the oil? Have you been able to do that?
Oh, it's been on. Pretty interesting. Yes, actually we have. And there's been some visual effects, quite dramatic, with waves, formations in the water, oil pockets appearing out of nowhere and disappearing again. That's pretty wild stuff. Luckily, Nancy, being a journalist herself has been taking a lot of video footage, and I'll take my video footage as well, limited to a digital ELF Canon 220 camera. However, I can get some cool pictures in that. And a lot of stuff happens on the water itself and witnessed by folks. Channel 5 News came down and filmed some stuff. I don't even know if that aired on the news, but there's been a lot of folks seeing and coming around looking at the different formations in the water and that kind of thing. And one of our locations was right alongside BP Group and the Coast Guard. What we did there was starting to affect the water, but the noise and that upset the British Petroleum workers. We talked to the owner, and then the owner said, well, I'm getting everybody complaining about you guys, so you got to leave, so we left. I went back to Alabama and set up some more experiments. Then arrived in up here in Florida somewhere.
So you got so you did get results then, but you got complaints from people that are around the immediate area because of the sound and so forth. But you did get results then.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's kind of funny. It was a BP, it was a little Jeep that British Petroleum had, and it said BP Safety
on their logo.
I took a good picture of that with Nancy standing by the Jeep. Our next door neighbor was BP Safety.
Right.
Okay. Ironic kind of thing with all the strange equipment in the back of the trailer pointing out and thinking, okay, this is too funny to pass up as a photograph.
Exactly.
So we operated there for a couple of days anyway. And then we're at Blanchard Seafood in Grand Isle, and they got some amazing results of the water cleaning up. And the other thing is we get a lot of animal life coming around, marine life and birds and that coming in back of the trailer. They tend to like the sounds or whatever we're doing, you know. It's I'm still trying to figure out all the mechanics and engineering of exactly what we're doing. I kind of resort back to the Department of Defense's papers on that was written up for INSCOM, Security Group, U.S. government, 1983 Star Wars, where it states about depletion of space-time, about 56,000 megajoules of energy less per cubic yard of material or space-time. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm starting to relook at some of the old written-up lab reports and what is the causation of the effects in the ocean. Because ordinary radio waves wouldn't do it, or audio would not do it, but something else happens when these two come together and create this unique vortex, if you want to call it that, or this depletion or increase in energy per cubic yard of space-time.
So were there representatives of BP that came up to you and were supportive of what you were doing, or did they see you as a detractor getting in the way, seeing as that they've not cleaned up everything as they should?
Oh, no, no. Some of the BP people came along, and one boat pulled up and came out and said, well, this is really cool stuff, you know. And we use dispersant. When we see oil, what we do is we dump dispersant on it. That's what they said right there, right in the back of the trailer. But no negative stuff, really, from anybody. It's just that the politicians and BP and the Coast Guard don't return phone calls to Nancy. Because she contacts all of them and maybe gets some support here, but they just don't bother. I think it's all red tape, politics and money and all that stuff, same old story kind of thing.
Has that been the major problem with your research? Is it's been held up by a lot of red tape? Because I feel like for guys like you that should get support across the board for what you've done, you run into massive amounts of red tape. Is that usually what happens? Is that what stopped you from proceeding to getting where you want to go?
With this project? It appears so. I mean, the Port Authority in Orange Beach, I believe, he said, well, you have to go through this agency to get paperwork and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, it's time consuming and it usually takes years. So what we're doing is not asking for any money at all and going on private beaches. That's been a lot of politics involved. Like, you know, political people are kind of.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you don't even have to say.
Paper and duck.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. I know exactly how they are. No, we're going to take a quick break, John, and then we're going to come back with you because I've got some questions on the board that have come here from some listeners. They want to ask you a couple things, so we're going to be back in just a moment. So stand by, John. Stand by, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment. This is James Martinez with Cashflow here with my special guest, John Hutchison, The Hutchison Effect. Please check it out, everybody, at his MySpace website address. Stand by, everybody.
Tomorrow's rain wash the stains away. Something in our minds will always stay. Perhaps this final act was meant to clinch a lifetime's argument. Nothing comes from violence, nothing ever could. For all I was born beneath.
Hello, everybody. This is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. The great poet Robert Frost once said, quote, "A bank is a place where they lend you an umbrella in fair weather and ask for it back when it begins to rain," end quote. I'd like to show you how you can take back your power and your financial freedom. You may be already aware of your inherent need to create your own financial future rather than someone else deciding for you. In the days ahead, you'll be faced with more and more financial duress unless you take action and take your power back. If you've been faced with substantial alleged credit card debt or foreclosure, call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. You may begin to know that it's time. Time to begin to imagine a life where you know your true value isn't working for a bank, rather making your bank work for you. Invoke your desires and make it so. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655.
I'm Sarah Evans. Disaster victims need your help. The American Red Cross provides victims of disaster with food, shelter, counseling, and more. Your support for the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund helps victims of thousands of disasters across the country each year. To make a contribution, contact the American Red Cross today. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit www.redcross.org.
Hi, everybody. This is James Martinez from The Cashflow Show. For years, you've heard me speak about your money, your financial future, and your responsibility to yourself. Today, more than ever, with increasing toxicity in our foods and water, it's time for you to take charge of your life and take back that which is rightfully yours, your health and your wealth. I'd like to introduce you to Ion Ways, the answer to your health and financial future. If you're looking to start your own business or take back your health, Ion Ways is the solution. Please go to www.ionways.com/James Martinez. Whether it's to start your own business or take control of your health, you'll not find a better company and products to do so. For the best in the market of energized, ionized, and alkaline water, go to www.ionways.com/James Martinez. For powerful antioxidant effects, superior hydration, more oxygen, and proper pH, remember, health is the only wealth. That's www.ionways.com/James Martinez.
AchieveRadio.com.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. This is James Martinez. My special guest today is John Hutchison of The Hutchison Effect. Amazing guy. I've got some questions here on the board, John, that have come in from listeners. Ruby and Eureka is asking this, and she wants to know, what apparatus did you use to cause the anti-gravity and make the objects fly upwards?
What kind of equipment?
Yeah.
My goodness, that's a lot of it.
I imagine so. I imagine there was a lot of equipment.
Oh, yeah, especially engineered stuff by myself and stuff off of Navy warships that I use. Combination of all kinds of different frequencies and manipulation of those frequencies.
Now, when you heard about the Philadelphia experiment and time travel and all these unusual people that have either been involved or witnessed that, does that seem to you, based upon what you know and the experiments that you've participated in, is that a fact, something that you can reproduce? You can have something teleport from one position to another position? Have you done that before?
We've done a teleportation of objects that reappear in somewhere else, yes. I was approached by a group in Hollywood land because we're going to do 13 episodes on all these topics. And my friend Ron Melaloni, a BAE systems contractor for DOD, he's interested in the same kind of stuff I do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do the Philadelphia experiment. I did a small one in my apartment where the ship back could kind of funny in the water, levitated, and I got about hours and hours of tape of this, and a little bit got put on the internet.
What? For the ship. Wait. You did this experiment in your apartment?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Great.
It's a small ship. I mean, it's a foot-long Navy destroyer ship, right? And it's in a basin of water, and then I applied the fields to it. And the strange part, when I did Earth Black Holes for History Channel, John Ehler, director of photography, was interviewing me, and I had it going there, but he filmed it, but he never even showed it on that show. They just showed me sitting there talking away a blue streak for an hour, on and off. And I thought for sure they would show that footage, but they did not. So that's kind of like, duh, why not? But I've been approached by Discovery Channel to build the Ark of the Covenant and did a successful one-hour show for Discovery on the Ark of the Covenant. Time travel, I'd like to get into that a little bit. That'd be a cool project to do, too. And that was going to be one of our projects with Ron and I, that we go to the South Pole and find that vortex down there that is kind of a hot topic in the Black Ops world, where time is reversed back, I think, 35 years.
Right.
That whole thing, I don't know if you heard of it, but I got
they got a lot of stuff going down there, a lot of stuff that nobody knows about because it's all been hidden and so forth. But what would you like in a perfect world to do down there? I mean, if you had the support, financing, and so forth to be able to achieve down there?
Well, NBC would have financed all this, and we've gone down there and actually try and locate this vortex and do the same experiments they were doing with balloons, sending it up into this gray, strange cloud. And once they did that and pulled back the balloon coming down, they found all their instrumentation was turned back 35 years. Repeatable experiment with a lot of Russian scientists involved that went to the White House, and it was then quiet. I got as a lengthy email, which I got printed out. It was to military people I know and from Lockheed and other locations about the entire thing. And I thought, well, how cool. And then I brought it up a couple of years later, in around 2006, to the NBC group, saying this would be a cool thing for one of our episodes to go down there. And Ron Melaloni and myself would be on radio together talking about all this stuff. And he said, yeah, that's with the producers. That was one of our shows that we're going to do. But sometimes Hollywood talks big, but nothing happens half the time anyway. So
I couldn't agree more with you there. I since I work in it, I hear about it all the time. So that didn't actually was not finalized. So you were basically led to believe something was going to happen and didn't follow through with it, correct?
Yeah, basically that happened. Then another person, Tracy Boyd, I think she did iRobot or something like that. And Michelle Grease, who wrote up Poltergeist. He was going to get involved in all this big stuff. We're going to do the same kind of stuff in 2008. And she said, you know, don't talk to anybody about it and blah, blah, blah kind of thing. And then,
right,
again, nothing happened. So she just sort of vanished off the face of the earth. But you just take it in strides, saying, okay, sounds great, let's do it. Then go on to the next person. Okay, let's do it. Especially when it will come true. That's how I do it. I just don't, you know. Don't mention to anybody else.
People don't believe me when I tell them about Hollywood, but I think, you know, what you've done is showed up in enormous amounts of films, including Fringe. I think some of the characters in there are based on you. Have you heard that? That some of the characters in Fringe, the scientists there, are based upon you? People to compare you to that?
Oh, kind of. I mean, most of Hollywood knows of folks down there. I know a lot of entertainers, too, down there, and producers. They kind of know who I was. I was on a radio show down there, KSLX, Los Angeles radio, and talked about it, and they kind of knew who I was. And one of my producers was on with me, Robert Drake. We're together on two shows, actually, on this radio station, on CBS radio. So everybody thought it was cool, but, you know, it's again, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood. What can I say?
There you go. Hey, you don't have to apologize to me. I know exactly how they are. Okay, this is the big question now, is with the world in its current state and the money situation and our dependency on oil and all this nonsense that we've been living for so many years when we don't really need that, it's guys like you that know free energy exists and so forth. How long would you think that a society, less the red tape, if based upon your discoveries and experiments that you've achieved thus far, how long would it take to create a situation where you could have devices available for the public that would take them completely off the grid, and they could be self-sufficient energy-wise. In other words, they could use energy, some kind of free energy device for their homes, for their cars, and so forth. Because I know you're a free thinker, and this is like within the realm of possibility. How far are we away from that? How many years do you think it would take?
It wouldn't take years. It'd take probably months if everybody was cooperative and really wanted to do it, like they really wanted to do the Manhattan Project. Now, because the reason I say that a friend of mine, Franklin E. Mead, of Meade's Air Force, he developed a free energy device, which he got patented in 1996, December 31, a device for capturing zero-point energy and converting it into usable power. But that's a long time ago now. I mean, like, okay, is it because people are apathetic and they really don't care about this stuff? But if all the groups of people that are interested got together and did it like a Manhattan Project with great determination, it could be free energy could be months away, actually, and get factories back into production to make these things.
Months away. Wow.
There's other people doing free energy stuff. Somebody within 12 feet of me has done this, too. So it's there. It's just a matter of how motivated are people to do this kind of thing, you know? I mean, in the Black Ops community, they got things like they call the battery replacer in the military for over a decade. But I guess it's up to the people if they really want it or not, or if they just like oil. I don't know. I mean, it's all the motivation.
Right.
Determination.
Now, I got another question from Ruby here on the board who asks, what could teachers do to inspire kids and to study science? In other words, perhaps to study you. Have you been invited to speak to students on high school level before or college level?
I've been invited a few times. I gave lectures in Denver, Colorado. Gave a lot of lectures in Japan and Germany. I think the TV show I did called Beyond Invention was really inspired a lot of people when it aired on Discovery Channel. Right away, there was, I think on one of my websites was 10 million hits within a month, something like that. And Beyond Invention aired for several years, and people liked it. So I think media, through main media, if one can really get it interesting for everybody, and not just show all this crazy stuff on TV, it would be quite a teaching tool and inspiration to a lot of folks.
Now, I've get email from all over the place of people that are interested in seeing guys like you get what they need to go where they want to go in terms of research and in terms of getting devices completed so they can be kind of quote-unquote off the grid, so to speak, and have their own free energy devices. Now, when you've lived in various parts of the world, I'm presuming, and I could be wrong here, that you supplied your own power. Is that correct for living in your apartment or home or whatever? You were completely out of it, supplying your own energy field. Is that true?
No. I was tied to the grid. I made free energy devices, which I demonstrated in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was funded by the Japanese to make more of them, which I did do, as well as the German team, but then it never made it into factory production.
Now, why is that, do you think? They everybody's interested, they want it to happen, but then it didn't make it into production. Is there an ownership issue, or what's the story there?
No conflict. Only the persons that funded me, they simply wanted to travel the world, like I mentioned before. Thomas Messer of Germany, he just didn't want anything to anchor him down to his travel and spiritual quest. And with the Japanese folks, they have a lot of my technology over there. They may be working on it right now. But my sponsor in Japan, last I seen him was a number of years ago, and he saw that we're in production for the Ark of the Covenant, and he got all excited and said, well, I'm going to try and reintroduce you into Japan, but I never heard back from him. So I don't know if he's ill or sick, but... Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. When you were growing up as a child, did you take an interest in Nikola Tesla right away, which is a natural inclination for you to focus your thoughts on science and Nikola Tesla and what he did? How did you start?
Oh, good heavens. I was into radio and guns and firearms and making my own. Like I'd read a history on gunsmiths. Gunmakers in the United States, beginning of cartridge arms and history of that kind of stuff, as well as radio, and then came across Tesla, and I got inspired and decided to replicate his stuff, because in Vancouver there was so much surplus around in turn-of-the-century electronics. Nobody really wanted it. They'd dump it off at my place, and then I started to find the actual wire that was turn of the century, and I started reading all the info I could on Tesla and then replicated his laboratory. I thought, well, this is kind of, like, cool.
Very.
I'd jump from one topic to another. I'll go into gunsmithing for a while and restoring antique arms or whatever. Just yesterday I had a field day on the USS Alabama. That was like, wow, you know, this is cool. Like, I like Navy ships and cannons and artillery and all that neat stuff. So I took a lot of videos and photos of that adventure. Mm-hmm. So I jumped from topic to topic and go around in circles like that. So I'll go into radio and then Tesla a little bit, back to guns and antiques and anything unusual and wild, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Does your research into Tesla, because a lot of people have not been able to reproduce what he's done. Obviously, you've reproduced almost everything that he ever did. Is that correct? In terms of
pretty much because again, surplus was so plentiful that some of the actual machines that Tesla would use, such as made by the companies at turn of the century, I could find those pieces of machinery. And the reason they can't replicate a lot of the things is because they don't go back in time to that time period to actually do the full replication of the Tesla machines. You got to do it all to the 18th century standards.
Right, right.
Right down to the wire. So luckily, I had access to a lot of that stuff in Vancouver. Why, I don't know, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be very abundant there.
Mm-hmm. Is Nikola Tesla, this is an unusual question for you, but has it been easy for you to tune in to Nikola Tesla? You know, he's not here, obviously, but it seems to me you're one of the few people in the world that was has the ability to tune in to what he's done and reproduce it. Do you feel like you were in touch with him?
I think so. I mean, I really tuned into him. I even knew people that knew him in Vancouver, like Thomas Lee Richardson, who had a lot of Tesla's papers in his home. Actually, his home was full of stuff. And so I tuned in a lot to Tesla and some of his older friends. And again, I was very lucky in finding a lot of components from the turn of the century.
Is Nikola Tesla, would you say, you know, somebody, I think about you and I think about Nikola Tesla, and there's so many similarities because you're totally an unusual type of inventor. Now, when you've reproduced some of the levitation and all this unusual activity with metals, were those things that you witnessed, did you expect them to happen, or some of the things that you were doing experiments with totally surprised you that you didn't even think was possible occurred?
I had no anticipation that any of that would occur.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought nothing of it. I thought, well, maybe some form of high voltage causing this to happen, and it's probably well known and that. And it took Alex Pizarro and George Hathaway and other scientists to convince me that it's important. I thought, no, come on. I mean, it's not important. I'm not even a scientist, for Pete's sake. and I'm not kidding. And they kept on my case, and I said, okay, let's demonstrate to SAIC down in San Diego and Washington State University and to other people. And as I did so, and on occasion, Alex Pizarro would come in. I'd be doing my gunsmithing, and he said, oh, John, you know, you get upset. We've got a very important demonstration to happen, and you're working on that. I said, well, I got it all figured out. All I have to do is turn it on, and you got it. Why sit around, you know, doing nothing? So,
right.
Needless to say, the demonstration turned out A-OK. I believe it was for the Hypotronics Corporation in Brewster, New York. Felipe Galuppi, his name is, and his team came out and witnessed the metal disintegrating and all that cool stuff, which was videotaped.
I would so love to witness this stuff myself. I love what you do. There's a question here from Barbara in California who asks, what would you need to get your free energy device fully developed and ready for manufacture?
I guess somebody with brains that knows how to do that. I sure don't. I mean, I'm not into selling stuff or trying to figure out business plans and all that. I mean,
that's a whole other animal.
Hmm?
That's a whole other animal, then, the manufacturing and developing it. That's a whole other thing that you're not into, per se?
No, I'm not into promoting anything or trying to do these kind of things. I kind of leave that up to who's sponsoring it at the time, but again, my sponsors had other interests. But my last team that was going to try and do a self-powered house was a film producer called Kevin Albar in Hollywood, working with Charles Bombardier in Valcourt, Quebec. And they set up, well, John, gee, you know, you could come and stay at our private mansion here, and we could have the experimental factory. I said, okay, that sounds cool. And then there's some problems developed with Kevin in Hollywood and Charles, and it got all tangled up into a bit of a mess where Charles said, well, let's cool off for a while and see what happens in some months from now. But the Bombardier family is kind of well known in Canada for their interests in and also developing maglev, Segway products, and all kinds of different things, aircraft, stuff like that. So I got to know Charles kind of on a personal level, but
It amazes me. I'm amazed that you've been approached by so many people and so little of them have been able to follow through and actually utilize some of your experiments and put them into practical use. And Hollywood seems to be like just they want to shoot you, they want to film you, they want to do this, they want to do this, and then nothing ever happens. So this is like a common thing for you then, huh?
Well, the Hollywood people were pretty steady for 10 years coming up to my place filming me for Bermuda Triangle, for Discovery, Fox, CNN, and all this stuff. And I would air in a small segment or a full segment or a full hour in these shows. But after the bailout happened, they didn't have any funds anymore to come up into Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of questions and that from production companies wanting to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're just lacking money, but a lot of the folks I know in Hollywood have a great interest in what I'm doing. Oh, one of my fans down there, Norman Baker of Kombucha Tea fame, and Steven Seagal, an actor friend, and actresses Sandy Fox and other folks, blah, 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 blah.
Right, now I know.
Actually, we're going to come up and see me, but again, mm-hmm. they've got their own stuff to do.
Sure, sure, sure. Is there anything that you're working on now that would you say you're ready to announce that's new, or are you spending most of your time trying to clean up the golf mess? I mean, is that your primary area of interest at the moment?
Yeah, that's basically my interest is antique armaments, but and Navy ships and tanks and stuff. But that's ever since I was a kid. But my main thing here is working with Nancy on cleaning up the Gulf, and we've been going at it pretty steady for a month, hitting different bays in the area down here. I mean, there's a whole untold story down here of how much damage is done, how people are affected. That seafood's all contaminated, mm-hmm. and this is not hitting mainstream media.
No, it's all being cut out. Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. We acquired a few pirates that want to start websites and get donations, which we said, no, you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all free.
Right, right. Now, is it what you see now, because I've seen the video footage, it's interesting that you have so many animals show up that are attracted to the sounds that you're reproducing there. Have you seen any unusual activity from animals when you're doing these experiments?
Well, they're very friendly with Nancy. The dolphins come up and splash water on her, and as well as myself. I even filmed them coming up to Nancy, an injured dolphin. I can't tell you if it's from Corexic or he got bitten by a other animal, but I videotaped that. They're very friendly. And one time, when I was in Daffin Island operating this stuff, a gigantic bird appeared at the very back of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
It had been at least, it was a heron.
Right.
But it appeared like, I thought to myself, do they have ostriches down here? What? Heron, huge bird, just was standing outside, and I'm trying to determine how big this bird it really is, you know, was standing there at least for 10 minutes just taking in all the tones and signals and looking one way, looking the other way, and walking around. I eventually just flew off. I thought, okay, that's kind of intriguing.
That's very intriguing, actually.
And then I thought a submarine surfaced when the giant whale came up. I think it was a whale. I don't know. It's just a giant marine life creature popped up out of the water. Blanchard's Seafood, actually, on Grand Isle. And I thought, what? You know, what? And then it vanished. I think Nancy might have caught it on tape. I was too busy tuning the equipment to get my tiny camera to film it.
Hey, listen, John, we're out of time, but I want to let you know that I want to thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I'm a huge supporter of you. I am here in Hollywood, so if there's anything I can do for you in Hollywood, believe me, I know the whole story here. So I appreciate you taking the time out, and I support everything you're doing, and I hope you actually get to achieve your goals there cleaning up the Gulf, because I know people will be thankful all over the world for doing that.
Oh, thank you very kindly. That's really cool. So you live in Hollywood?
Yeah, I know the whole story, dude. So you're preaching to the choir here. So okay. So thank you very much, John. I appreciate it.
Real pleasure. You have a great day.
Hey, you too. Take care, man. Bye bye. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Ion, Dr. Carolyn Dean, Bob Neverett tomorrow. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Ka-ching.
AchieveRadio.com.
Hello, everybody. This is James Martinez from The Cashflow Show. The great poet Robert Frost once said, quote, A bank is a place where they lend you an umbrella in fair weather and ask for it back when it begins to rain. End quote. I'd like to show you how you can take back your power and your financial freedom. You may be already aware of your inherent need to create your own financial future rather than someone else deciding for you. In the days ahead, you'll be faced with more and more financial duress unless you take action and take your power back. If you've been faced with substantial alleged credit card debt or foreclosure, call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. You may begin to know that it's time. Time to begin to imagine a life where you know your true value isn't working for a bank, rather making your bank work for you. Invoke your desires and make it so. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655.